This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Ethan Eternal, Chapter 20, The Forgotten Angel. Amanda had saved her life many times. Deborah's elder sister had been a protector and guardian when no one else was or could. Amanda's strength was Deborah's in this way. It had been the only constant in her life, and today would be no different. Deborah felt the car slowing before it came to a stop. She thought, at first, that it might be momentary, but soon felt the car shift and the engine rest. She had managed to free her left hand several minutes ago, but had paid a heavy price to accomplish this. Deborah was fairly certain that she had broken one of her fingers during the effort, and the pain of this was staggering. She got the idea for her escape when she was attempting to wiggle her left hand free, but was interrupted by sudden jolts as the car ran across bumps in the road. This was frustrating at first, but she soon decided to use it to her advantage. By strategically positioning her body, she used the handcuffs to break her left pinky finger. All it took was one good bump, and then she was free. She had been dragged into the trunk, along with an old office chair comprised of cheap plastic and a wooden material that might be particle board. Even in agony, it was not difficult to break it apart. The legs were the sturdiest and the largest of the pieces. She imagined that they would be the most suitable weapons at her disposal. Deborah picked the one that felt the heaviest, gripped it in both hands, endured her injury, and tried to visualize knocking the head off the first person that tried to open the trunk. Footsteps approached the rear of the car. Deborah tightened her grip. Her heart began to race. The moment was near. She heard a key turn, and then the darkness was shattered by a blinding white light. There was no time to let her eyes adjust. She swung with all her fury and felt a satisfying impact as a man cried out and dropped to a concrete floor. Immediately, Deborah crawled out of the trunk and landed with a heavy thud onto a cold surface. She was surrounded by cars of every kind. Fluorescent light beamed down fiercely from a ceiling twice as tall as it should be. This was unexpected, as was the unconscious gentleman lying beside her. She had dealt him a severe enough blow to render him still. But he was not one of the men from before. He was dressed in a finely tailored black tuxedo with a sharply fit white shirt and bow tie. Something about this uniform seemed to immediately indicate that this elderly gentleman was no foot soldier or hired thug. Perhaps she had only managed, in the height of her rage, to dispatch a servant, maybe even a butler. Try for a moment to imagine her surprise when she allowed her eyes to lift and saw the other figure that was waiting there. She had not noticed him before. Perhaps it was because of his lack of height, or perhaps it was because her mind would not allow her to acknowledge the sight of him. The mind is fiercely protective when threats to its own function arise. The more serious the threat, the greater the amount of control it will take away from our conscious thought. It is a survival mechanism that saves us from more than just physical damage. Sometimes, the damage that is avoided is much, much worse. When she did finally meet his eyes, though, she was unable to reason the sight. She was unwilling to make sense of this irrational impossibility. He simply could not be here. This was not possible. Her frozen shock was broken by an unseen blow. George had approached silently. While she was distracted, he swiftly moved in from behind and kicked her across the back of the head. She joined David on the floor and in slumber. The giant stared down at the woman for a long moment before meeting his master's stare. Ethan was amused.
"Oh, I like her," the boy said with a chuckle. "This will be more fun than I thought."
Ethan turned away and began walking up a flight of elaborately decorated stone steps. Even in his garage, Dorian had insisted on decadence. Not many people would ever see this area, but he felt it was important to make sure that those that did were left with an understanding of his attention to detail. He was glad that he had made this choice. Today was a perfect example of why he had been correct in doing so. Ethan smiled as he approached an iron door atop the stairs. This too was ornate. It was handmade in Germany for Adolf Hitler's personal estate. The Russians had confiscated it, along with many other treasures and artifacts found at the Berghof by Allied forces. He had paid a considerable fee to obtain it, especially since it was not supposed to exist. He was proud not only that it was being used so regularly now, but he was also proud because he could remember its history so clearly. Before he had become this boy, Dorian had begun to forget some things. His aged mind was a weakness that no longer hindered him. He had not expected all of the benefits that would come from his transformation. It was exciting to be young again. Turning back to his large friend, Ethan shouted playfully,
"Bring them both up, George. I'm afraid David is not going to wake up anytime soon. You can handle that, can't you?"
George paused for a second, and then knelt down. He took hold of Deborah, and then David, lifting each of them over his shoulders like bags of rice. The giant easily began his ascent of the same steps that Ethan had just taken. Dorian nodded approvingly, and then turned to face the door. He placed his right hand onto a panel beside the iron door, which scanned his palm, and then initiated a mechanism that opened the door. George followed as his young master proceeded into the house. The German door shut behind them, returning the garage to still silence. He was so tired. His body felt as though it might succumb to the heavy weight of exhaustion that now rested firmly on his back, pushing him towards sleep. But Colt would never abandon his friend. Never. When he was still a puppy, so very long ago, this man had saved him from certain death. Perry Long had been there when Colt's mother gave up her struggle to the ravages of agony inflicted upon her in that musty pit. She had been savaged to the point of death by a monster that still haunts his dreams, and yet she had clung to life long enough to make sure that her only son would find protection in the arms of a good man. She chose Perry. She gave her child to him and passed away, certain that she had made the right decision, positive that this was a good man, and that he would keep her colt safe.
time had proven her right. Perry had been, and always would be, Colt's master. Not because the dog had been trained to believe this, or out of any pack instinct mentality, but because his mother had chosen this man for him, and because Perry had proven time and time again that this trust had been rightfully placed. Perry was a true friend and loyal guardian. Through the years that they had spent together, Perry and Colt had survived many threats and embarked on great adventures. The experiences of life were shared by them both, as was their duty to help those in need and to make right many wrongs that they have witnessed. Man and dog were linked in this way, in a way that only God can design and men can scarcely understand. They were companions, partners, brothers. Colt would die before he would abandon this. Ribs bruised, back aching, feet torn, Perry's friend pulled himself back up from the cool concrete. The face of a dead man stared at him from the nearby street. The old man was kind and had paid the ultimate price for it. Colt could not help him now. Miles had seen to that. The dog whimpered for a moment and forced himself to turn away. There was nothing left to do here, no matter how much he wished to undo this most recent wrong. The dead cannot be helped, and it was his duty to help those that needed it. He swallowed his anger at the senseless murder of the kind stranger and pressed on towards the scent of Perry Long. His hand was rough, scarred yet warm. Cindy analyzed every detail that the faint light would allow as she held the wounded cowboy man's hand in hers. It was as big as both of Cindy's. The size of him was alarming, but something else seemed to come along with that dread, something mysterious and comforting. He was not a monster, not like the others. This was a different sort of stranger. Her attention was so drawn to the fingers that she did not notice his eyes. Perry slipped in and out of a dream. As he did, he caught glimpses of the concrete ceiling above. There was little illumination, but enough so that he could detect strange white images all around. They were faint, yet the light seemed to be drawn to them, caught in the substance of their creation. Pieces of rock or chalk had been used to illustrate such unexpected images on the curved surface of the ceiling and walls here. The detail of these drawings was astounding. Even in his haze of fading consciousness, Perry tried to commit all of them that he could to memory. Over the years, he had found himself in perilous situations, and he knew that every moment he could hold on to now could be crucial in the next. He faded out again, but the girl never noticed. Her attention had been caught by something else, something staring silently down the dark tunnel. She froze. Something sharp found its way into her left hand. If the intruder came any closer, she would make it wish it hadn't. Two eyes glimmered in the shadows of the sewer. A low growl arose and echoed down the concrete walls until Cindy felt this noise reverberating through her like the passing of a nearby train. The thing was serious, dangerous, and focused solely upon her. Bob began to shiver from the terror that seized him. It was going to be two against one, but Bob never was much of a fighter. Cindy knew that whatever was going to happen next was up to her. She steadied her footing as it came closer. Her heart began to race. It was not retreating. In fact, it was moving faster. She heard its four paws tapping against the wet floor as it neared. There was no fear in it. She took in a deep breath. She hoped it would not be her last.
Jason stepped as silently as he could. The dog was only a few yards ahead, but it was moving faster now. It must have caught a scent. He made sure not to lose sight of the gray animal. He stayed close to the left side of the alley as he crept down into the shadows. It had not turned back to look in his direction, but if it did, he could try to blend in with the textured bricks and mortar. Before he had the opportunity to try his theory of how he would attempt camouflage, Colt suddenly vanished. The immediate disappearance stopped Dr. Rodriguez cold. He froze for a moment as he tried to figure out what was happening. The dog was gone. 1 second it had been there, walking steadily down the center of the trash-strewn alley, and the next, gone. This is a man that had seen many strange things. He had been a part of the development and creation of some extraordinary inventions and medical procedures. Some, upon seeing his work, might think it magic or science fiction. Some might call the things he has done miracles. But even with all of this experience with the strange, a vanishing dog was impressive. Logic had always proved itself to be the great constant in his life and throughout his work. He had developed sort of a worship of logic in this way. If logic was a football team, then Jason Rodriguez was one of its biggest fans. After all, logic had won every Super Bowl. Logic had beaten every opponent. Logic had all the best players, and Jason rolled his eyes. He always thought about sports when he got nervous. The brain is an odd machine. Apparently, he had a choice at some point in his life between medical technology and competitive professional athletics. He wished that he could go back to that fork in the road and take a different journey. Maybe that was why his mind so often returned here. He waited for a few seconds and listened. He heard the tip-tap of a dog's stride as its paws dipped in and out of water. Curious. Jason pushed himself away from the wall, which he had been clinging to more tightly than he realized. He walked forward a few feet and felt his heart race somewhat faster as he tried to see into the darker area ahead. Catching sight of the open manhole drew out a low exhale from him. He smiled to himself and shook his head. Logic wins again. Dr. Rodriguez stepped down into the sewer. He had stayed out of sight during most of the chaos, but it was time to do something now. The dog belonged to the ranger. He knew this beyond any doubt. His intention was to follow it to wherever Miles had chased its master. It sounded like a good plan, until he discovered that Colt had gone down into this sodden catacomb. He was not at all sure now. He peered down a long tunnel. It was too dark to see very much, so he retrieved a keychain from his right pocket and squeezed a rectangular rubber device. It contained a tiny LED light that, when activated, produced a surprising amount of luminosity. He aimed it down the long passage and began to walk forward slowly. Somewhere ahead, he heard the dog bark loudly. He paused a moment, but the bark did not come again. The bark was not one he would expect to hear from the joyful reunion of an animal and its master. This was not good. Cheerleaders were shaking their pom-poms in the back of his mind. Jason blinked them away, stepped forward slowly, and tried not to think about football.
Captain Hamilton threw a 12-gauge shotgun to Kevin. The younger man snatched it out of the air. While staring at Derek, Kevin began loading shells into the weapon as he spoke with a brisk and certain tone.
"There's nobody you can trust here. You need to get that out of your head."
Captain was loading his own shotgun, but stopped for a second to respond.
"Son, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. I know these men better than you know yourself, so just shut the fuck up for a second."
Kevin was not swayed.
"Listen to me, Captain. You're making a big mistake here, okay? I know, because Perry made the same mistake. When we walked into that ambush in Montana, we had at least 30 men with us. Perry knew some of those men just as long as you knew these state troopers, maybe longer. When everything went to hell, we had maybe 6 men standing with us."
Jim Peabody said nothing. He was busy loading 9mm shells into empty clips for his Beretta. Hamilton answered with subdued frustration.
"I understand that. Hell, you think I trust these guys? I don't. I don't trust a fucking soul in this world except Jim here. And only because I know for a fact he wants to kill every last motherfucker breathing in that compound. I sure as hell don't trust you, Mr. Hill. So back off. I grew up with 2 of these guys, and we need to help. I ain't walking into the fucking lion's den with my thumb up my ass."
Kevin exhaled slowly.
"We have one shot at this. Dorian and his goons think we are dead. They won't even see us coming. You just shot a spotlight on us, and maybe even invited them to finish the job they started at the police station."
Hamilton nodded and spit out a large wad of tobacco.
"We needed to help. I got us some. I didn't see you calling in the cavalry. Where the fuck is that ranger anyhow? You trust him so much, then why don't you call him? We sure could use another hand."
Kevin's eyes turned downward. He thought on this for a long moment. As he was about to say something in return, Captain Hamilton surprised him with a much gentler comment.
"Look, man. Hell, I didn't mean nothing by that. I'm sure he's still kicking somewhere. Maybe he'll turn up pretty soon."
Kevin nodded.
"Yeah."
Jim was still not talking. He took the last 2 rifles from the gun cabinet in Captain Hamilton's basement and threw them over his left shoulder. His eyes were fixed forward. His face was cold and determined. Derek turned and glanced into the other officer's eyes for a moment, but didn't let himself stare. He was pretty sure Jim hadn't blinked in over an hour, and it was starting to really concern the older man. With a serious but measured voice, Captain Derek Hamilton said to his 2 fellow warriors,
"We'll wait here another 30 minutes. Then we move. With or without any help."
He paused and met Kevin's concerned eyes.
"Okay, son?"
Kevin hesitated and then nodded. He turned away and finished loading the massive weapon. Under his breath, lower than anyone else could hear, he muttered to himself,
"Come on, Perry."
Perry Long opened his eyes. The light was overwhelming, brilliant, white, divine. He saw the angel, perfect and pure, beautiful and majestic, as it hovered in the air above him. Her face was smooth and soothing, serene and welcoming. Tears filled his eyes as he turned to see those that had come to greet him at the gates of heaven. Colt was here. That was good. He smiled at the sight of his old friend. He was glad to have him on this journey. With the dog were 2 other figures, but he could only make out one of them. Perry's eyes widened as the features clarified. He choked back further tears of joy as he met the eyes of his brother. Mitch reached toward his younger brother and placed a warm hand on his face. He said something, but it was muffled, as though distorted by an unseen power, softened by the great veil of secrecy between the world of the living and the one beyond. Perry shut his eyes and exhaled deeply. He had never been very religious, but he knew now that it did not matter. His doubts in the truth of salvation were being set aside. The embrace of God was coming, regardless of the past. He was going home. Colt whimpered as Perry fell back into unconsciousness. He was completely terrified by the look his friend had given him. Dr. Rodriguez lowered the flashlight from the face of the fallen ranger. Jason's stare was cold and empty. He paused for several moments, thinking hard on the many choices that he had made, and the fate of the good man that was about to die. Cindy and Bob huddled in the corner, eyeing the strangers suspiciously. Bob was still trying to convince her to run, but she was ignoring him. Colt ambled up to her once more. It hadn't taken much for the charisma of the creature to overcome the girl's fears. She could see through Colt's intentions, like staring through glass. He knew nothing beyond friendship. She had understood this almost immediately. Cindy was glad she hadn't stabbed him with that shard of glass. She wasn't sure yet about this new man, though. Dr. Rodriguez peered upward as he contemplated everything. He was amazed at what he saw here. Clicking the flashlight on, his eyes met the intricate detail of a massive chalk mural. A meticulously crafted woman was drawn upon the ceiling. The woman was striking, and her features were almost perfect. "Wow," Jason mumbled to himself, and then turned the light down. The dog had moved. He didn't even hear it walk away. He glanced around the empty chamber, searching from corner to corner with the light until he saw it resting in the corner. When he had come upon the body, he had expected to also find the dog, but it was acting strangely. It had been facing away from its master, staring into the darkness. This new behavior was just as puzzling. Rodriguez frowned a bit as he cleared his throat and said to the resting dog, "You okay, buddy?" Cindy dove onto Dr. Rodriguez from behind. Her right hand dropped onto the side of his neck with a 6-inch piece of broken glass. Half of it immediately went inside of him, but she pulled the weapon out just as quickly as it had gone in. Jason dropped forward towards the cement at his feet, but before his body could fall, she managed to stab him 5 more times. The flashlight on his keychain went dark and fell from Jason's grasp. His face smacked down hard against the cold floor. He didn't even have time to gasp. Colt might have interfered with this violence, but he had succumbed to the weariness that brought him here. None of this would provide enough noise to rouse him from his sleep, and if it had, he may not have had the capacity to do anything about it. Jason was on his own. Had he seen the girl sooner, he might have had a chance to win her over, maybe even help her, instead of joining Perry Long on the brink of the darkest horizon. Blood blossomed from the open wounds of the stranger. He grew still as Cindy watched him. Bob was quiet. He had nothing to add, and no concerns to address. Cindy was in control. She felt the glass in her hand, the blood on her face, and marveled at the power that had come to her. She saw within her thoughts the face of Mike, as he had torn hers away. This is what that must have felt like. In this moment, a great choice lay before this girl. She saw a future in one hand where she could claim the title of the beast and become the savage monster that Mike had made her. And she saw in the other hand, her empty hand, the pale skin of unblemished youth, empty and uncorrupted by the choices still ahead. Bob heard his friend screaming inside her mind. She was afraid, horrified, and also exhilarated. He wondered who she would be when this moment was over, and what would become of him. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 20, The Forgotten Angel. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.